Oh boy, I hope we didn't lose that recording. Hello and welcome to episode 48 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company that has built a high-performance distributed S3-compatible object storage designed for large-scale data infrastructure that was built from scratch with private cloud as a target, but has also become a de facto standard for home labs through a strong focus on community. That company is MinIO. I'm talking to Garima Kapoor, the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder at MinIO. Welcome to the show, Garima.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today, Anthony.
Great stuff. So just before we get into the history of MinIO and all the good things around object storage, I just want to give a shout out to the show. So if you love great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes or go to gtwgt.com and register your interest. As a reminder, all episodes of GTWGT are up on all good podcasting platforms, up on the YouTube channel. Please hit that subscribe button. And as usual, you can catch this on Spotify, all hosted and distributed by anchor.fm. And with that, Garima, let's talk about MinIO. And I think the first thing to probably chat about is, you know, founded in around about 2015, but maybe talk a little bit about your background and how you came to found the company with your co-founders.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey, and you're right. We founded the company end of 2014, and we are here now as the fastest growing object storage with close to a billion Docker downloads, approaching a billion Docker downloads in September. Wow. So it's been quite a journey, and I mean, looking back how we got started. So I don't know if you know that I started this along with my husband, Anand Babu Periasamy.
Oh, there you go. I did not know that. Wow, okay. That's interesting in itself. There you go.
Yeah. So he had sold up a previously successful company, which is GlusterFS, and that got acquired by IBM. So in GlusterFS, for a lot of different reasons, I could not be part of the company officially. And of course, I was part of the journey right from, you know, naming the company to the exit of the company. So I saw everything very closely from very close quarters. And right around the time, you know, AB was trying to get out of Red Hat, that's the time that I told AB that I need to do a startup of my own, because this is something that needs to be mine. And not something from, you know, how I was watching from the sidelines in the previous company. So that's the reason why I wanted to do a startup. And that was the foundational ground for MinIO.
So that's really interesting. So obviously I know GlusterFS, a lot of people out there know GlusterFS. Yes, I didn't actually put that two and two together there. So that's really interesting in itself in terms of the lineage that you guys have got. Were you involved in any way there, or always in the background?
Just in the background. That's the reason why I really wanted to do something of my own, to leave my own mark in the industry. So that was the foundation for MinIO. And as we were, you know, coming up with different ideas, and storage, of course, was not the first choice that we wanted to do, because AB was just coming out of storage
and having seen.
Yeah, and storage is usually considered, you know, for startups, it's usually considered like a graveyard for startups. I don't know if you know that terminology in the startup world. So
that having attended a lot of VMworlds and trade shows, usually the storage startups are at the back, and if they're successful, they come forward to the front, but their numbers dwindle quite significantly.
Yes, so we did not want to do, and also we wanted to do something fun relating to, you know, bionics. So we were doing multiple experiments with respect to what we wanted to do. And, you know, no matter what experiment we did, the problem statement always came down to data, right? The data is at a scale and it needs to be stored and it needs to be available all the time to the application. So having gone through multiple experiments, then we just decided that, okay, you know, you need a simple solution to store this data at scale. And only when you store the data at scale, you can derive intelligence on top of it.
Okay.
So that was the beginning of MinIO. And right around that time, AWS S3 had convinced the world that, you know, S3 is the right kind of technology to store data at scale, unstructured data at scale. Yeah. So we just started with a very simple premise, keep the problem statement, very simple, very focused, that we wanted to be AWS S3 for the rest of the world. And that's how Minayo started. And quite interestingly, you know, we just did our Series B in December 2021, and we were just looking through our seed round notes, and I was looking at the seed round deck. So our the first statement that wanting to be AWS S3 for rest of the world just remains very consistent in terms of, you know, our focus as a company, as a product. And that is what I would say has been, you know, the primary factor that we have been successful in this space and growing in this space. So I think it was quite interesting to see the same message, because as company evolves and startup, things change quite a bit.
Yeah.
And we have made a very concerted effort to be just very focused on one problem, and one problem do it better than the rest, I think.
Yeah. So the problem you're trying to solve is effectively what we talk about. I talk about quite often in my day job working for a backup company, and obviously being around storage all my career, it's just the problem of data growth, data sprawl. How do you create targets that are resilient, scalable, and also future-proof, right? You mentioned S3. So why do you think S3, apart from the behemoth that is AWS and Amazon, why do you think S3 and object storage has become almost like the de facto? And in fact, moving forward, what we're talking about is, you know, S3 becoming the de facto on the primary as well. So not just on a long-term archival situation, primary. So how did you see that? And then how do you think that's shaped the future a little bit?
Yeah, so it has changed quite a bit from the time when we started Minayo. And S3 is a protocol. If you see, it is very simple protocol if you compare it to POSIX API. So, you know, it's very simple, gets and puts you. It's for immutable data. The data doesn't change. It's not for transaction data. So the problem statement is a very simple problem statement. Of course, you need to solve it at a scale. But if you see, the heart of S3 API is simplicity. So I think that is the reason why most of the cloud native applications have just latched on to that. And also, secondly, I think because the data needs to be stored at scale, if you see from last even 10 years itself, right, from a couple of terabytes of data, now it's becoming like petabytes of data in just normal
data. By default, right? By default, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. So the scale has changed so much, and object storage is the right kind of platform to store that data at scale and make it accessible at scale. Of course, when we were starting out, object storage had a very limited set of use cases in terms of, you know, archival, like you mentioned, like a third tier of data.
Yeah.
And I think I would like to take that credit for ourselves here, because we partnered with Intel, and Intel was one of our early partners who told us that, no, you need to do a high performance object storage, because there are applications in analytics space that will need high performance. So we partnered with them back in 2016 to start optimizing Minayo to take advantage of the underlying instruction set on the Intel gear, like AVX 512 instruction set, optimizing it in assembly language and whatnot. So in that terms, I mean, we started talking about high performance back in 2016. And if you see, like, now most of the analytics applications, be it big data applications, Spark or Presto, or, you know, machine learning applications like TensorFlow, or platforms like H2O AI, they are all talking to S3 natively, and they all need high performance.
Yeah.
So I think it has changed quite a bit over, mainly because of scale, and secondly, because of the hardware optimizations, and software can take advantage of that hardware optimizations that have happened. So yeah,
that's a fundamental shift in the industry, right? Where, you know, for a long time, it was just about, you know, how much disk can you throw at it? The speed of the disk, you know, the cost of the disk, didn't really matter.
Yes.
You know, the architecture was always the monolithic types. Obviously, at the back end, there was different ways to scale it out. Front end and the header was always the issue in terms of the performance, even in block storage and whatever, NFS, whatever it is. Object storage, to a certain extent, allowed that scalability at the back end to grow massively, which is why the archival data started. It's interesting that you talk about, you know, you're working with Intel to optimize in the software, but working with software to partner with hardware, actually in the CPU and in the assembly level,
to actually assembly get level. It
to optimize. That's crazy to think that. And I in my research doing this episode, I came across the fact that you are CPU optimized for a lot of that you know, performance resiliency sort of situation, which is crazy. Because I think early days of Minayo, you guys did really well from a community aspect. I think I mentioned at the start that, you know, you really seeded a very strong community, which is important in the startup world as well. If you don't have a strong community, you can't grow. You know, and obviously your GitHub page and the fact that you are open source to a certain extent supports that. So how did you balance the fact that, yeah, we've got to grow via community, which means we're going to be putting into home labs and devs and all that kind of stuff, versus the longer term goal of wanting to really make this a primary sort of storage for the future of AI, ML, and all the modern applications of data?
Yeah. So I'll just give you a little bit of background. So MinIO is 100% open source. It's released under AGPL license v3.0. And the same binary that we give to the community, we give to our customers. There is no, blocked features that we don't offer to the community. It's everything is under open source. And we have been very transparent and true to our community from day one. And in terms of, you know, what we will be doing with the open source, we've not held anyone hostage to our product. And we just want to continue with the trust that we have developed with our community. And coming to the community of MinIO, because it's a storage product, these are not just a bunch of hackers and hobbyists, right? As you would see in other application-based open source community. This is a community built from architects, built who are actually building their applications, who are actually application developers themselves, who are integrating it to S3. So that is the community, and that's also our customers at the end of it. So we are not conflicted in terms of, you know, whether we need to optimize MinIO for our community or our customers. It's one and the same. It's more about the journey. As the community starts downloading the software, they start integrating it as a very early part of the application stack. And once it gets to the production, they engage with us commercially. So there is never a question of either this or that. It's more about the journey, onboarding the community. And then, of course, when they take it to production, they see the value in terms of engaging with us, whether it is, you know, getting a commercial license, so they're free from open source license obligations, and also support is just one part of the subscription that we offer to the customers.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. And a lot of successful companies that I know and offer that same sort of theory, right, of supporting the community, the same binary that you install is the same that you give to everybody across the board, no lockdown. It's amazing, right? Like what's the size today? It's a 34 meg binary or something? Has it got a bit bigger?
Because we did get a little bit bigger than that because of the console that we introduced.
Oh, the console, always when you add a GUI. We'll touch on that later. That's an important part of it, I think. Yes. Interesting question. Yeah. So, but that said, it's a very small, I mean, I'm running it on this very laptop small. Here. You know what I mean? There I'm not joking. Go. I'm running it on my laptop. I run it at home.
Wonderful.
And to be fair, what I've seen is that whenever I talk to engineers, so if we separate traditional platform engineering guys from DevOps guys who have got different use cases for these things. If someone's building a home lab or wanting to build a really small test environment, the default is almost MinIO, right? Because it's very easy to set up. Cross-platform, single binary, easy. That's really interesting in itself. But then the fact that you can actually take that, scale it up and take that single binary and actually convert it to a cluster that's highly scalable. That's the power of being what I like to call software-driven, hardware-agnostic. How do you balance that particular thing? Because obviously software is written for traditionally software is written for a specific sort of, I guess, band of hardware. But when you're giving a binary and saying to people, install it on anything you like effectively, what's the challenge there?
So, so MinIO software defined, it's 100% software-only solution and commodity and hardware agnostic solution. So from the day one, the architectural goals have been such that, you know, MinIO should be able to be deployed on any kind of hardware. Of course, there are, and that's where the community comes into, a huge help and support, because community has deployed MinIO across various platforms. So whether it is even from Raspberry Pi to high-powered Power 9 systems of IBM. So the range that MinIO gets deployed on is huge. And because of that, we also get to see a lot of issues that come up, when you deploy it in certain architectures. And those issues we get to see from engineering perspective. And as a company, an architectural decision, if it makes sense for us to go and solve those issues, we go ahead and solve it for our community. And that's the reason why it has been optimized so heavily, and it is hardened to the level that, you know, you can just take it and deploy it with very high degree of confidence in any kind of deployment topology that you might have, whether it is, you know, Kubernetes, VMware, or bare metal. It can just run anywhere with great amount of prediction and predictability. From customer perspective, you know, as we get the data from the customers, there are only few set of hardware vendors that customers engage with, whether when it comes
pretty
to
much.
Hardware.
At the end of the day, it's all very, you know the usual suspects, right?
Exactly. So when it comes to that small group, we do know what kind of hardware MinIO is usually run on, what kind of specs. Also, we are very light on CPU and memory overall. We just expect the customers to give us a good bandwidth network, so that so that if the customers are deploying us on the NVMe gear, especially, you know, they give us like 100 gig network, so we can justify the high power drives that you are giving to MinIO and give the complete maximum throughput that they are able to get out of the system. So that's the only requirement that we have. Object storage is throughput bound, so that's the only requirement that we ask from the customers. But other than that, when it comes to commodity hardware, it's very much interchangeable. If you go from one vendor to another vendor, Supermicro, Dell, Cisco, it's all the same for us.
Network is the bottleneck effectively. And I've seen some particular graphs, and I'll link to a particular video in the show notes, shows the comparison between, I think it was same hardware, then basically putting different network cards in there and showing the performance increase. It was almost exponential, as you'd expect there. So network you've said it right. Software driven CPU and RAM isn't a problem. You kind of optimize that. Yes. It's just what you can throw at it, basically, from the disk to the network to the client.
Exactly. And the way MinIO scales is that, you know, it scales instead of pools. So because, you know, on hardware, the drives sometimes are not available. The same consistent drives might not be available what you deploy right now and 2 years from now. Yep. So as you're scaling, the way MinIO is set up is that, you know, you can scale with heterogeneous infrastructure as well if you need to. Initially, of course, we ask you to keep the cluster homogeneous, but as you're growing and scaling the system, you should be able to bring on bigger and better drives. That's absolutely no problem. So those are certain architectural decisions that we have taken in terms of, you know, when it comes to rebalancing or not rebalancing, all those things get into the decision so that customers have the maximum flexibility as they're building the scalable, scaling to 500 petabytes or so. So those are some of the decisions that are important here.
I've seen that as being a trend, actually, in that, you know, the heterogeneous versus homogeneous hardware. It seems to me that because our hardware that we've bought in the last sort of 5 to 10 years has been pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, hasn't really aged. I mean, we've got to a decent level there of CPU performance, you know, always supportability. But if you can extend the life of the old hardware, that's actually really significant. I was an ex-service provider guy, right? A lead architect and whatnot. So understanding that you've got this hardware that you pay, you know, 36 months for and you're done, and then you throw it out, it seems pointless. So if you can put it under maintenance and still leverage it for this sort of use case, it's actually tremendous, right? So I think that's the way the industry's gone, and if you're embracing that, it's very important.
Absolutely. And certain of these use cases, right, as for example, Hadoop is in most of the organization is on its way out, and Hadoop is all on commodity hardware, right? So as you are taking that software solution out, you should be able to leverage the same hardware. Of course, we do give recommendations in terms of if you're bringing certain kind of hardware, this is the parameters that you need to consider from performance standpoint and whatnot. But absolutely, the customer should be able to reuse that existing set of hardware to deploy MinIO. Should be no problem at all.
All right. So talking about the use cases, obviously, you know, we've chatted about enterprises and the growth of object storage. So where do you see the use case for object storage moving forward with talking about the edge, service providers, enterprise SMB? Yeah. Where are you guys looking to get yourselves to?
Yeah. So if you see the, object storage is really a horizontal play across the verticals, you know, whether it is telco stack, whether it is big data Hadoop stack across the across the industries, or whether it is machine learning, AI, backup, it's across the industry. So it's a very horizontal play. In terms of, and also one more point I would like to make here is that if you see how the cloud has evolved, AWS, when they were getting started off, they first came with AWS S3 and then the services around it. So S3 really formed the foundational pieces for them, whether it is even their block storage came after that, EMR, Amazon EMR came after that. So the whole bunch of application ecosystem came after S3. So in that sense, S3 object store is a horizontal play. When it comes to Minayo, where we see our growth is from the high performance workloads that are at scale. And that is where, as customers are moving away from Hadoop and re-architecting their stack to make it look more modern and cloud native and be close to the cloud. So that is where we see traction for Minayo. So most of the customers are running, Spark containers for Presto, TensorFlow is another popular application, Kubeflow. They're all very popular applications for Minayo to run on top. And also another thing that we are noticing is that even the backup applications, they require high performance. Traditionally backup has been considered a very, their performance is not the top criteria to meet. I would just characterize it like that. But having worked with Veeam and other backup vendors, what we realized is that, because the way these backup softwares, the way they write to object storage is around, 1 MB chunks of objects that they write, which is, on the borderline of small objects as it is considered, less than 1 MB is considered a smaller object size. So, for those objects, you do need high performance. And that is where I think you might be more aware that, V12.0, when it comes out, you will see a lot of optimizations from performance as well as from scale categorization when it comes to object store. And that's where I see the Minayo getting more traction, wherever high performance and scale is needed. Yeah,
it's very interesting, right? Because, I think you're right. The way that the footprint of the data has changed a little bit, the way that people are recovering data. But if we take backup out of it, but it's a big part of where I play now. But just thinking about what you've talked about, analytics, data lakes, TensorFlow, analyzing the data that's there. It's all about, I've talked about this before, the data gravity and also the activation of data as well. So you have to be able to not only get the data quick, but actually go through it at a faster clip. But also what we've seen from a Veeam perspective and just from a backup industry perspective is I think we've kind of pushed the limits because of the way that we do, access data, store data. So we kind of have pushed the limits a little bit, and we found over the past couple of years when we released our object storage support was that performance was good at the cloud, because a public cloud, because they had the potential scale, but the on-prem specialized appliances struggled a little bit. So you're right, it's just that performance and high capacity need to go hand in hand. There's that triangle that gets formed, right? It's it's a triangle scenario. You can have 2 out of 3, but you can't have 3 out of 3. I think we're moving to a situation where object storage actually offers, storage, performance, low latency, like the three things in one, which is quite interesting in itself. Just quickly, you mentioned Amazon S3, and I had a little bit of a thought bubble here. Mm-hmm. So Amazon came out with S3 and everyone used it and loved it. And, everyone's got S3 compatible storages now. What about things like Glacier and those real deep storage systems? Are we going to get to a point where we're replicating that through, say, a Minayo software scenario or an appliance? Because we get asked all the time, how can we take Glacier and not have it on Glacier?
Yes, that's an interesting problem that we are seeing as well. And Minayo does provide tiering. We have the lifecycle management of data. So we do tier the data from hot tiers NVMe to a slow tier based on hardware, hard disk drives. And then, of course, we tier it to public clouds as well. And and we are going to, as a part of roadmap, introduce, tiering to tape storage as well, where you can offload the data based on, whatever the data governance and retention policies might be in a customer scenario, you should be able to do that. Glacier API we have not seen it getting popularity within either the community or the customer standpoint. So, and because it's a different set of API, you don't really need to care about it only when you really need to offload it for, you know, cold storage. That's when it really comes into handy. But if, you know, as I said, it's part of the roadmap to just tier the data to the tape, I think that should solve most of the requirements that we are getting from the customers.
Yeah, so it's not so much about replicating, like, you know, making a Glacier compatible API. It's more about what you guys do within the construct of the systems you've got today within the S3, and how you tier it through there and how you offload different areas. The data management.
Exactly. And for customers, you know, for their on-prem, tape also takes times in terms of, you know, hydrating the data and making it available again. So a lot of the customers that we see are doing at scale. It's just going with very, very dense boxes in their own infrastructure. Like, you can pack as much as like 4 terabyte in a single box nowadays. Like, Seagate has those big chunky chunky servers available now. So if you can pack that much data, and you know, the requirement for tape really goes away. From compliance standpoint, there'll always be some requirement, but from making sure that you can scale, you can store data at scale with a very attractive TCO, those kind of environments are handled through, you know, just going after very cheap, very dense hardware and just deploy MinIO on top of it, where you can just pack lot of this in a single server. So that is usually our recommendation, and data is available all the time in that scenario to the customer, so there is no need for, you know, hydration of data, bringing it back online and whatnot. So
which is the problem with long storage, right? Cheap and deep, you know, has its sting in the tail, right? So that's quite interesting. Yeah. Just pivot a little bit to, there was a very pointed moment in your timeline and history when you released the operator console and the GUI. So this is interesting, right? Because for so long, you know, hardcore dev people, DevOps have been going, oh, it needs to be CLI. Why would I touch a GUI? You know, there's always like a stigma attached to a GUI. I come from an old school sort of, you know, I hit that sweet spot in my IT career where Windows and the applications and it was just GUIs everywhere, right? And then we kind of shifted more into the CLI, as opposed to, if I was, I think, born into the 90s, I would have been CLI. So long story short, why do you think that was so pointed a moment for you guys?
Yeah, we resisted doing GUI for the longest time. And then eventually in 2019, I think we gave in and built our Kubernetes operator and the console around it. So consoles are really good for demo purposes. I mean, you have to, you know, if I have to give a demo, I can just, you know, show a nice console and go through the features,
Aesthetics,
get through the conversation. So it's very easy when you're showing the demos. But most of the heavy users of storage, they always use kubectl commands and CLI. Our goal is to make console equal to all the capabilities that are part of MinIO client, as well as, you know, the capabilities and the features that you can do. But it depends on the, you know, who is operating it. So, for example, if a console is being operated by an admin who just wants to see the audit logs and whatnot, they can probably just use a console. Whereas, you know, if there is a developer who's building applications, I would just expect them to use kubectl commands and develop their applications on top of MinIO. But heavy users usually tend to go with CLI and kubectl. I won't deny that. But console does have really neat and clean features in terms of someone from administrative side, if they want to do operations, access the data, make sure everything is set up completely, cleanly, properly, you know, even replication across different sites, you can actually see the data transfer and whatnot. So it has cool things to it. Heavy user, I do know they will just go with the CLI. I don't expect them to use console heavily.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though. I think you know, those dev types and the operators who are in that world already will definitely leverage it, because they have in the past. Even you were successful before you brought this out. I think what it does open up, it means that for someone who's a little less, I won't say they're more hesitant to use it, like the CLI, they can still access your product, download, and actually be up and running real quick. I think we've seen this parallelized. In certain areas of IT as well, say with network infrastructure, gateways, VPNs. Yeah. Like the hardcore users will use the CLI, but the fact that VPNs are more prevalent today because people can just download and have a nice front end to it, that helps the average user get into play, right? Which I think speaks to why you guys have been very successful also in the home lab world, because you have made it easier for people to do. So I think it's a very good move there as well.
And, you know, one of the things is that open source traditionally has been, you know, categorized as a open source tool or product will usually not have good GUI or interactive features to it. The interface will really be bad. So we really wanted to go after that perception as well, that open source products can be like really beautiful and easy to interact with as well. So that was another reason. And our competition was trying to create a lot of FUD as well, that, you know, Minayo is not enterprise ready. So one of the things that they will bring up is that they don't look, they don't have console when they go and talk to the business people, they don't understand.
Look, I am, I'm very aware of, I'm very aware of being labeled as non-enterprise. Believe me, I work for a company that ironically has been labeled that way when we're in service providers running thousands of workloads and big. So I know that kind of label, it's obviously a bit of FUD. Just wanted to finish off on Kubernetes and containerization, obviously, as the modern way that applications have been developed and deployed. So, you know, you've had a lot of success. In fact, a lot of your messaging that I've seen is now primarily focused on Kubernetes, right? So has there been a shift that you guys have done on purpose to make sure that you're seen to be Kubernetes friendly moving forward? Or, you know, what's the thought there?
You know, it was a very natural move for us. Like I mentioned, we started in end of 2014, beginning 2015. So right around that time, Kubernetes also started, if you see the journey of Kubernetes itself. So a lot of the product decisions that we took for Minayo actually grew along with how cloud native and microservices decisions were getting taken in that world. So there was just a very natural I would say intermix of you know, Kubernetes and Minayo. And also community has been just, you know, using Docker Hub, Docker downloads for Minayo right from day one. It's just very easy to get started and pull just a binary from Docker Hub directly rather than actually downloading from the website. So that was also an indication in terms of how the community is using Minayo. And then most of the customers that are deploying Minayo at scale are using Kubernetes. Whoever is wanting to enable a multi-tenant environment, they are just going through the Kubernetes route, because Kubernetes makes things extremely simple and easy to do that. So so it was just a very, very natural natural amalgamation of the technologies, if I might say so. So for us, it was a very natural decision. There was no like extra thing that we needed to do on Minayo standpoint. Of course, Minayo operator is something that we did, because everyone wanted to just use Minayo through you know, our operator. So we just gave them the operator and then a Helm chart as well. So yeah, but other than that, I don't think so. From the product standpoint, we had to do anything else to be Kubernetes friendly. We were Kubernetes friendly.
You've grown almost parallel to the growth of Kubernetes.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And being software-defined.
Software-defined. That's awesome. Hey, we could talk for hours. Like I said at the top, and like I say in every show, you can keep on talking for hours. Okay. But I want to kind of wrap up, but I want to wrap up by kind of asking you, what's the future for you guys? Like, you know, where do you go from here? You know, is there anything coming in the near future, or where do you see yourselves in sort of 3 to 5 years? I know that's a very existential question, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, focus has been our key strength. Doing one thing and one thing better than the rest is what we always would want to strive for and would want to do. So being very focused in terms of just being an AWS S3 for rest of the world is where we see Minayo growing and accelerating its growth as well. And we are right on very early stages of the journey. If you see the scale at which the data is getting produced, we are just on the very front end. And there are so many new applications that are going to start getting onboarded on object stores. So there is a lot more within the object store space itself for us to do and optimize for those particular applications and deliver Minayo at scale. So focus is our strength, and that's what we want to be 3 year, 5 year, 10 years from now, we want to be the company which stores data at scale. So that's what we want to do. That's what we are good at, and we want to be focused there.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, look, thank you for that. I think it's really exciting. You know, I wanted to have you guys on for a while. It's great to talk to you. Very insightful conversations around, you know, the state of data basically today and where it is. So very happy with that. Thank you very much. I'm just going to wrap up firstly by saying, if you like the show, please subscribe. You can find me at Anthony Spiteri or at GTWGT podcast or at GTWGT.com. Thank you very much, Garima, and thank you, Minayo, for being on the show. And we'll catch you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Thank you. All right, let me stop that recording.